For the most part, the prevailing view of the way things began in the universe is encapsulated as part of a theory called the Big Bang Theory. The bottom line here is the Big Bang proposes that a primal release of energy set the universe into motion a very long time ago. While there is controversy as to precisely when and what, if anything, existed before the Big Bang, the data strongly suggests that it did happen. And what's really key to our exploration of time is that the energy from the Big Bang appears to be moving away from one place in the center of the universe. As it does, the data shows that it is expanding and cooling. It's in the outward expansion of the universe from a central point that we may find the clue to time's mysterious flow in one direction. Just the way our egg on the kitchen floor does not reverse the sequence of events that led to its shattering, the universe does not reverse the flow of the outward expansion that began with the Big Bang, or at least not in the current cycle of the universe as we know it. Because time is the space it travels in, time expands with the flow of space, outward and away from its source. So while the laws of physics may allow time to move either forward or backward, to the future or to the past, it's the outward flow of the universe itself that makes time's arrow march in one direction. And with this idea in mind, what would happen if the universe stopped expanding and began to shrink? Would it begin to move in the opposite direction and become smaller? Well, this is precisely what the traditional Hindu texts suggest is our ultimate fate. In the creation story of the ancient Puranas, for example, the existence of the universe is believed to be the result of the inhalation and the exhalation of the god Brahman's breath. Similar to the way scientists describe the Big Bang as the release of energy that began the universe, the Brahman myth describes the beginning of the universe as the release of energy from Brahman's exhale. As long as Brahman continues to breathe outward, the universe continues to expand. And just as scientific theories describe a time when the forces of gravity and electromagnetism will reach a balance, stop expanding, and begin to contract, the Hindu texts describe a time when Brahman completes his exhale, pauses, and begins the next part of his breath as an inhale. If space-time truly exists in the way that relativity describes it today, then during this time, we would experience time in a very different way than we do today. This is where things get really interesting. According to the current theories, the contraction of the universe would cause space to flow in the opposite direction from what we see today. In other words, all of the particles that have moved away from the place where the Big Bang originated would begin a journey backward toward their point of origin. And because space is time, time would reverse its flow as well. So we may well discover that the reason time seems to move only forward toward the future is simply that it's following the movement of the space that contains it. If we ever find ourselves in a place where space is contracting, such as a wormhole or a hidden dimension, the mathematics that we know today would still apply, only in the opposite direction. So now that we have our understanding of time's outward motion, let's apply what we know to the everyday world. We've all heard that history repeats itself, but what does that really mean? How much of history repeats, and can we know when a bad experience from our past, or a good one for that matter, is likely to show up again in our lives? In the next chapter, we'll use the simplicity of nature's programs to answer these questions. If we know where we are in the outward motion of time, then we can discover the seed that began the cycle and when the personal and global conditions of the past will show up again in the future. Chapter 5. History repeats in love and war. Fractal warnings for the future. The look on my teacher's face that day is something I'll always remember. She was obviously shaken as she walked into our classroom and asked us to remain calm, collect our coats and supplies, and walk quickly to the buses that were waiting for us outside. It was the middle of the day and much too early for classes to end. I remember thinking that our teacher knew something that she wasn't telling us. Why else would she be wiping the tears from her eyes while asking us to stay calm? It was a different world in 1963. The Cold War between the Soviet Union and America was at its peak. The frightening image broadcast around the world of the Soviet Union's leader, Nikita Khrushchev, holding his shoe and pounding against the desk while shouting to America, "We will bury you," was still fresh in my memory. I remember thinking of it each week as our class practiced dropping to our knees and ducking under our desk to protect ourselves in the event of a surprise atomic attack. I also remember thinking that if we were ever actually bombed, my desk probably wouldn't be much protection from the force of an atomic blast. Only a year earlier, everyone had breathed a sigh of relief as the two superpowers backed away from one of the Cold War's most visible confrontations and the brink of a nuclear war, the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 1962. The girl in the seat next to me remembered it too and whispered that maybe the missiles were back. We all knew that something had happened, we just didn't know what. It's with the backdrop of such a world that I joined hundreds of thousands of other children across the country that left school early that day for a reason that could not be shared in the classroom. It was November 22, 1963. The President of the United States had just been assassinated. The nation was in shock. There were so many unanswered questions. Who did it? Why? How could such a thing have happened? Well, just a couple of days after Kennedy's assassination, our local newspaper printed the story that rekindled my childhood fascination with patterns. The title of the article was "History Repeats Itself." Its focus was an eerie set of so-called coincidences that seemed to connect the 1963 assassination of President Kennedy to another assassination that had happened nearly 100 years before, that of Abraham Lincoln. While I'd always been interested in patterns and cycles, I'd never really thought of them in terms of things like the death of presidents. At first, I simply skimmed the statistics out of curiosity. While they were interesting, they seemed so generalized that I was unconvinced of any mystery. My thought was that any similarities were just that, parallels that the staff writers were drawing to make a flashy story. Both presidents, for example, were deeply involved with racial equality and civil rights. Both had wives that lost children while living in the White House, and both were shot on a Friday. Both died from a gunshot wound to the head. All of these were certainly uncanny coincidences, but not enough to convince me that anything out of the ordinary was being revealed. The more I read, however, the more specific and the more bizarre the parallels became. Lincoln, for example, was sitting in box number 7 of Ford's Theater when he was killed. Kennedy was riding in car number 7. The make was a Lincoln offered by the Ford Motor Company when he died. Both were with their wives at the time. Before his presidency, Lincoln had been elected to Congress in 1846. 100 years later, Kennedy was elected to Congress in 1946. Lincoln became president in 1860, Kennedy 100 years later in 1960. The last name of the men who replaced them in office was the same, Johnson. And both Johnsons were born exactly 100 years apart. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808, while Lyndon Johnson was born in 1908. As the comparisons continued, the similarities certainly seemed to be more than coincidence. They even went beyond the assassinations themselves, weaving their way throughout the personal lives of the men, their families, and their friends. Both men had four children, and both lost two of them before they reached their teens. Both men lost a son while they were serving in the White House. The doctor for both Lincoln and Kennedy had the same name, Charles Taft. The name of Lincoln's private secretary was John, which was Kennedy's first name, and the name of Kennedy's private secretary was Lincoln, which was Abraham's last name. Patterns even extended into the lives of the men who killed them, into their life history, their motivation, and their capture. A law enforcement agent named Baker, for example, detained Lincoln's assassin, John Wilkes Booth. An officer who was also named Baker held Kennedy's assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, in custody. It seemed that the so-called coincidences were endless, but perhaps more importantly, they're undeniable. Regardless of why or how these two events, separated by 100 years, could be so similar, the fact is that they are. And while this example could be chalked up to some sort of bizarre karma between these two men, the fact is that they exist. Whether we like to admit the similarities, the answer to our question of whether or not history repeats itself appears to be obvious. For at least these two events, the answer is yes. Along with our answer comes an even deeper question. Are the similarities that we see between the assassinations of two American presidents separated by 100 years part of a greater pattern? And if so, what is the pattern? What does it tell us about the cyclic nature of time? Just the way we search for patterns to find meaning in the mysterious events of our day, scholars do the same thing with historic moments of the past. Following the tragic death of President Lincoln in 1860, for example, historians began to suspect that his assassination might be part of a pattern that was emerging. Only 20 years earlier, another president had tragically died in office. In 1840, William Henry Harrison had become ill and died of pneumonia. With Harrison's death, it seemed that the seed had been planted for a pattern of such tragedies. In the years that have followed, the suspicion of those early scholars has been borne out. For reasons that are as eerie as they are mysterious, in the 160 years that followed President Harrison's death, with each 20-year election cycle, the U.S. president has either died in office or has survived an attempt on his life while he was in office. Let's take a closer look at these cycles. As we mentioned before, in the year 1840, William Harrison died in office. In 1860, President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated while he was in office. 20 years later, in 1880, James Garfield was assassinated while he was in office. In the year 1900, William McKinley was assassinated in office. In 1920, President Warren Harding died while he was in office. 1940, Franklin Roosevelt died while he was in office. And in 1960, John F. Kennedy was assassinated while in office. In 1980, Ronald Reagan survived an assassination attempt from a gun used by John Hinckley Jr. While his wounds were serious, they were not fatal. And in the year 2000, George W. Bush survived a little publicized assassination attempt from a grenade that was tossed into his motorcade during a 2005 visit to Russia. With the attempts to assassinate Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, the conditions of the pattern seem to have held true. The question that historians are now asking is whether or not Bush's survival of the 2005 assassination attempt has put an end to what has been called the 20-year curse of American presidents. The presidential cycle of 2020 will tell the story. When we look at the statistics, however, they seem to speak for themselves. Whether we're talking about the 100-year coincidences between Kennedy and Lincoln or the 20-year presidential curse, three facts are obvious. Fact number one, there are cycles underlying both events. Fact number two, both cycles began with a seed event. And fact number three, the conditions of the seed event repeat at regular intervals. The facts are undeniable. The question is, what do they mean? What are such obvious cycles telling us about the nature of our lives, our world, and even time itself? We may find that the message coded into a 3,000-year-old manuscript holds the answer to our question. But, as is so often the case, with that answer, we find that the door to an even deeper mystery has been opened. In November of 1999, another assassination of a leader shook the stability of the world. It was then that Yitzhak Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel, was shot to death in the city of Tel Aviv. While the event itself shocked the world, there was an aspect of Rabin's assassination that rumbled like an earthquake through the scientific community, with aftershocks that continue to this day. Before the day of his death, Rabin had been warned that he was the object of an assassin's target. What made the warning so unusual, however, was that it did not come from a secret informer as the result of detective's work, at least not a detective working in law enforcement. Instead, the information regarding Rabin's death was based upon a prophetic code discovered in a document that was created over 3,000 years ago. It was the Holy Bible. Specifically, the researchers who had warned Rabin had discovered the details of his death in a unique portion of the Bible. The first five books of the Christian Old Testament are the same mysterious five books that form the Hebrew Torah, one of the most stable documents in human history. A comparison of today's Torah with the oldest known versions, for example, shows that it has not undergone the edits and revisions of other portions of the Bible. In fact, only about 23 letters have changed in 1,000 years. So when we read the Torah, we can trust that we're reading the original text, just as it was intended over 30 centuries ago. It's precisely because of this reason that Rabin followed the schedule on the day he was killed. He was a deeply spiritual man, and he believed in the Bible so much, he felt that if his last day on earth was truly coded into such an ancient text, then the events of that day must be destined to occur. On November 4th, they did. It's within the Torah, and only the Torah, that the Israeli mathematician Dr. Eli Rips discovered the code that has been reviewed and validated by scientists and leading universities worldwide, as well as technical agencies that specialize in encryption decoding, such as the U.S. Department of Defense. Named the Bible Code, Rips and Michael Drosnin, the journalist who wrote the first book describing the code, discovered the details that they shared with Rabin. The Bible Code described the specifics of the event and did so with such accuracy that there could be no doubt as to what was being revealed. The Prime Minister's name, Rabin, had been spelled out in the Bible along with the date of the assassination, the name of the city it would occur within, and even the assassin's name, Amir. In some ancient and mysterious way, the details of the event that changed the course of history for Israel had been coded into the fabric of the most beloved book on earth, a book that appeared upon earth over 1,000 years before the time of Jesus. For over 200 years, scholars have suspected that the Bible does in fact hold more than the words that are read from top to bottom, left to right upon each page. An 18th century scholar, known as the genius of Vilna, once stated that the rule is that all that was, all that is, and all that will be until the end of time is included in the Torah from the first word to the last word, and not merely in a general sense, he said, but as to the details of everything that happened to him from the day of his birth until his end. Well, mathematicians today study the Torah's encrypted messages of time, past and future, by creating a computerized matrix from the letters of the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Beginning with the first letter of the first word, all spaces and punctuation are removed until the last letter of the last word is reached, leaving a single sentence thousands of characters in length. Using sophisticated computer programs, this matrix of letters is examined for patterns and intersecting words. The new computers replaced the tedious manual decoding that had driven Bible scholars to madness for centuries. Running against control groups of other texts, like the book War and Peace or Moby Dick or even the Yellow Pages telephone directories, researchers found that only the Bible was found to have the encoded messages. According to Harold Gans, a former code breaker with the United States National Security Agency, the NSA, there is about a 1 in 200,000 chance that the information revealed in the Bible code is a coincidence. Vertically, horizontally, and diagonally, the names of countries, events, dates, times, and persons intersect with one another in a way that sets the Bible apart from any other text, giving us a snapshot into the events of our past and a window into our future. And while the reasons that such an ancient prediction tool could see into 3,000 years of time so accurately remain a mystery, the big question is how does it relate to our future? In light of its accuracy for events ranging from World War II, the Shoemaker-Levy comet impact with Jupiter, the Scud missiles discovered during the first Gulf War in Iraq, and the Kennedy assassination, how accurate can this ancient matrix be when peering into the years to come? In answer to this question, Dr. Rips suggests that the entire Bible code had to be written all at once as a single act, rather than developed over time. Well, the implication of such a statement is mind-boggling. It means that when the Torah was written, all possibilities and all possible futures already existed and were in place. Dr. Rip says that we experience it like we experience a hologram. It looks different when we look at it from a new angle, but the image, of course, is pre-recorded. Well, the key to applying this ancient time code to future events may be in thinking of it through the eyes of what we now know about the cycles of time. Whether we're talking about world ages that last for 5,125 years at the time, or the link between the events of 1941, 1984, and 2001, it's clear that the cycles are involved and that each cycle has a beginning. In each instance, that beginning, the seed event, sets the conditions that will repeat at some various future date. From our understanding of natural rhythms and cycles, we can calculate when similar conditions and events will repeat throughout the cycles of time. So here's the question. Is it possible that everything from the war and peace between nations to the love and heartbreaks of life began with a seed event somewhere in our distant past? In other words, are we living out a pattern that began with the beginning of time, the beginning of our cycle in 3114 BC, and will complete with the end of the cycle in 2012 AD? And if so, is the Bible code the map that describes those cycles, as well as the seed events that set into motion all the human dramas playing out across our world today? Well, admittedly, these are huge questions, and they deserve more attention than we can do justice to in this audiobook alone. But the ideas are worth considering and may go a long way in helping us to explain the mystery of the Bible code and what the Torah is really telling us about our future. Whether or not we actually believe in the literal accuracy of the Torah is less important than our understanding of the themes that it describes. In the fourth chapter of Genesis, for example, the Torah time map describes the first betrayal of one human to another, the betrayal of brother against brother when Cain took the life of Abel. From the perspective of repeating patterns and cycles, we can think of this primal act of betrayal as the seed event that anchors the patterns of betrayal throughout the history of all remaining cycles and all people experiencing the cycles. And not long after this original betrayal, we also find the first acts of forgiveness in the same chapter. Among them is the story of Joseph, the son of Jacob, who is one of 11 brothers. As he was his father's favored son, his brothers became jealous. They sold Joseph into slavery, and in the second confrontation between brothers in the book of Genesis, this story has a different outcome from the first between Cain and Abel. The powerful act of forgiveness that Joseph shows his brothers many years later becomes a seed event for the conditions of forgiveness that permeate the rest of the biblical traditions, including our lives today. But just as the seeds of surprise and attack began in 1941 and repeat at intervals that can be known and predicted, the Torah may actually be the map of all possibilities that the genius of Vilna was describing in the 18th century. Since it's a map based upon cycles that begin with a seed event, and as the seeds are described within the Torah, we should not be surprised to discover that it also contains the patterns showing when and how those patterns repeat. Again, it's all about the cycles. If the cycles are still repeating, and we're part of them, what can they tell us about our personal lives and our global future? In times of change, learners inherit the earth, while the learned find themselves beautifully equipped to deal with a world that no longer exists. With these words, social philosopher Eric Hoffer beautifully describes the difference between meaningful knowledge and information without meaning. In a world of constant change, to simply know the facts as the learned is not enough. To know that a village pump brings the water of a well to the surface, for example, is great as long as the pump is working. If it fails, however, and the mechanism that makes the pump work is a mysterious black box that no one understands, then it may be a long time until the village has their own water again. Hoffer's simple yet profound statement brings the idea of time cycles directly to our lives today. As noted in the introduction, Both the experts and the ancient traditions tell us that we're living a time like no other in the recorded history of humankind. While there seems to be agreement that the early 21st century is a time of great change, the reasons behind the change could not appear more different. Scientists, for example, describe our time of change as a series of separate crises that just happen to be occurring at the same instant in time. From the worldview of many indigenous traditions, the shift in climate, rising sea levels, the melting of polar ice, the depletion of food, water, oil, and one of the strongest solar cycles in history is anything but separate. Following the wisdom of their ancestors' instructions, those who live a little more aligned with the principles of nature see modern crises as a part of something greater, the very changes that always come with the end of time and the beginning of a new world age. If we bear this idea in mind, what can we learn from studying the cycles of time? Well, now that we know that they exist and we know how they work, are there pitfalls from the past that we may recognize, prepare for, even prevent in the future? Once again, our time code calculator helps us to answer this question. Time code 13 reminds us that our knowledge of repeating cycles allows us to pinpoint times in the future when we can expect to see the repeating conditions of the past. So is it possible to look ahead and anticipate the flashpoints of the future so that we can prepare for them in the present? Absolutely. The time code calculator can help us identify precisely where they are. So let's begin by looking at the events in the last century that led to some of the greatest tragedies of history. If we recognize these cycles of possibility and when they will reappear, then they also represent the greatest window of opportunity to avoid the suffering and replace it with healing and peace. In the following section, we will identify key events of the last century to determine when the conditions that created them will repeat again. So let's begin where we left off in Chapter 1 with the relationship between 1941, the year of the seed event that spawned the conditions of September 2001. The future dates for the return of the 1941 cycle after 2001 were intentionally omitted. To list them would have made very little sense until we had the opportunity to explore the nature of cycles, how they work, and why they repeat. But now that we've done so, we can answer the lingering question as to when, or even if, any dates between 2001 and the 2012 end date of our present world age hold the potential for repeating the conditions of surprise and attack for America. The summary in Chapter 1 for the cyclic conditions based upon the seed date of 1941 showed us the two additional dates of 1984 and 2001 for the times we could expect the conditions to return. But what about beyond 2001? Are there any additional dates indicated by the program? The answer is yes. The time code calculator does indicate two additional dates. The first is 2007. United States intelligence as well as global media revealed that there were, in fact, a series of attacks that were planned against the United States and United States interests during this year. Fortunately, those attempts were intercepted in Germany and Saudi Arabia before they were actually carried out. The next date after 2007 is interesting because it shows up frequently throughout the calculations that follow. It's the year 2010. As we'll see, 2010 appears to be a kind of convergence point for many of the repeating cycles that we'll explore throughout fractal time. While historians analyze and dissect the wars of the last century, in many respects, a strong argument can be made that they essentially originate with the first great war of the century, World War I. Although technically the war ended and peace treaties were signed, the root causes of the political unrest remained, and the rise of dictatorships throughout Europe, including those of the Soviet Union, Yugoslavia, and Spain, can be directly linked to the way that World War I ended. So it's for this reason that some historians suggest, in effect, there was only one great war in the 20th century, a war that never really ended and that has continued through subsequent conflicts since that time. So whether we subscribe to this perspective or not, the fact remains that World War I and the loss of over 40 million human lives began with the seed events of 1914. The conditions of 1914 are the primer for the effects that continue to this day. So it makes tremendous sense to begin with this date to calculate when the patterns that it set into motion will return as the ripples of its repeating cycle. As with any pattern, the conditions that it creates continue until they're broken by the introduction of a new pattern. Knowing when and how the cycles of 1914 will appear in our lives give us the edge to do just that, to recognize the symptoms of war-producing conflict when it appears and prepare for what it may bring while working at the same time to break the cycle by introducing a new pattern of peace. The following summary tracks the time code calculations from 1914 to the end of the 2012 Great Cycle to show us when the greatest opportunities for peace, the choice points, reappear. Based upon the seed date of 1914, the first date that the time code calculator yields as the repeat of that 1914 cycle is the year 1973. The event that actually played out during that year was the Middle East or the Yom Kippur War, also known as the Ramadan War. The second date calculated for the seed cycle to repeat was 1997. The actual event that played out during that time was the beginning of the crisis between the United States and Iraq in November of that year. The third calculated date for the seed cycle to repeat is the year 2006. The actual event that occurred during that time was the tension sparked in the Arab world by the United States' presence in Iraq. The next two calculated dates for the seed cycle of 1914 to repeat are the years 2009 and 2011. It's during these times that the cyclic conditions for global war will reappear. But just as we discovered with the 1984 expression of the 1941 seed date, the presence of the conditions does not necessarily mean that what happened will repeat. Rather, it tells us that the conditions are in place and that the event may repeat. The Israeli-Arab War of 1973 is a perfect example of exactly what I mean here. Known by names that range from the Yom Kippur War and the Ramadan War to the October War of 1973, the conflict began when a coalition of Arab states attacked Israel on October 6th of 1973 in a dispute over borders. While the entire war lasted only 10 days, it occurred within the context of the global tension created by the Cold War. As is so often the case in regional wars, the two sides directly involved had ties with large nations and superpowers. It's in those ties that they carried the potential to escalate the conflict into a larger war, or even one on a global scale. This is precisely what happened during the 1973 war. A request from Egypt's President Anwar Sadat asking the Soviet Union for military aid, the Russian response to mobilize troops in preparation for that aid, and the United States' decision to move American military forces to a Defense Condition 3, known as DEFCON 3, which is a rare heightened state of alert used in preparation for possible war, was yet another crisis that brought the world to the brink of a confrontation between the two Cold War superpowers. Fortunately, through a series of sensitive negotiations, which actually excluded the United States president at the time, cooler heads prevailed. The Egyptians retracted their request for help from the Soviet Union, and the United Nations Security Council passed Resolution No. 339 on October 24th, asking the warring states to honor an earlier ceasefire. The point here is that the conditions were in place and the stage was set for a regional conflict to escalate to a global war during the year when the cycle carrying those conditions was repeating. The time code calculator demonstrates this beautifully, showing that 1973 is precisely the year that the 1914 conditions of world war would appear as a repeating cycle. While our ability to recognize such cycles doesn't necessarily change them or prevent similar conditions from recurring, it does give us a powerful insight into when to be on alert for a repeated cycle. It gives us the opportunity to respond to the conditions in a responsible manner when they show up. If we know, for example, that a nation's acts of aggression, such as the 1990 invasion of Kuwait's oil fields by Iraq, is happening during a cycle that carries the conditions of world war, then we also know that clear communication and sensitive diplomacy will be especially important during this vulnerable period of time in order to keep the conflict from blowing out of control and fulfilling the seed's potential. It's official. The crash of the U.S. economy has begun. With these words, writer and consultant Richard C. Cook began the article published by the Center for Research on Globalization. While such captions were common during the autumn of 2008 and meltdown of the world's financial markets, at the time that this headline appeared, nothing could have sounded more ominous or unlikely. Ominous because of what such a crash would mean, and unlikely because, at least on the surface, America's economy appeared to be nowhere near any kind of collapse. The date was June 13th, 2007, a full 14 months before the actual crisis of 2008 occurred. The article was describing the work of two leading economists who are looking beyond the outward signs of America's seemingly booming economy at something much deeper. Stephen Perlstein, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for business and economy that writes for The Washington Post, and Robert Samuelson, a contributing editor for Newsweek and Washington Post since 1977, both saw the same fracture in the economy, and they saw it at precisely the same time. And what they saw was frightening. Their concern was the growing number of companies that had huge amounts of debt compared to their profits, and the vulnerability of those companies to buyouts that were financed through borrowing even more money. In words that clearly reflected his concern, Perlstein predicted that across the board, stock prices and company valuations will fall. Banks will announce painful write-offs. Some hedge funds will close their doors, and private equity funds will report disappointing returns. Some companies will even be forced into bankruptcy or restructuring. Well, even for those not familiar with the technical-sounding lingo of stock market analysis, his message was clear. This was a warning, and those with interests in the American economy were the ones being warned. What these economists and others like them were telling us was that 2007 marked the year when the last pieces fell together and the conditions were in place for the perfect economic storm to unleash its fury. And whenever it happened, the U.S. economy would be directly in its path. While they accurately predicted the scenario, it's unclear if even Perlstein and Samuelson could have known how the economic storm they described would trigger the collapse of an entire world's economy. We've all heard it said that vision is always 20/20 in hindsight. In other words, it's easy to look back at everything from a military crisis to the loss of an NFL championship or even the end of a marriage after it's over, to see all the things that could have averted the crisis. Hindsight is easy, and it's accurate for one obvious reason, because everything we're looking at has already happened. All the same, as I watched the mounting losses of the New York Stock Exchange plunge further and further into the negative territory on September 29th, 2008, I had the same feeling, and I asked the same question that had occurred to me on September 11th, 2001. The question was this: is this crisis part of a larger pattern? And if so, could we have known in advance and maybe even acted differently? Well, unlike the 7 years that separated the crisis of September 11th from the development of the time code calculator, I didn't have to wait long for my answer. Using the same process described earlier in this chapter, I chose mode 1 of the calculator and went through the same steps it described to find when the conditions of a past event are most likely to reappear. I began by identifying the date when the seeds of the 2008 economic collapse could have been planted. From the experts along Wall Street to the commentators on the nation's media, the comparison was obvious, and it was nearly unanimous. Before the stock market lost over 777 points in the largest single-day drop in the history of the New York Stock Exchange, the previous record had been held by another loss that occurred in the same market 79 years earlier. It was over the course of two autumn days in 1929, the Black Thursday, of October 24th, followed by the Black Tuesday of October 29th, that America's young stock market lost 23% of its value. The panic and sell-off that followed led to a decline in the American financial system that would continue until it bottomed out nearly 3 years later. It was then that the overall market closed at a reading that sounds impossible by today's standards. Incredibly, by July 8th of 1932, the New York Stock Exchange had lost 89% of its overall value and closed with a reading of only 41.22 points. Clearly, the conditions of 1929 were the logical comparison for the crash of 2008, except for the magnitude of the loss. At first glance, the outward conditions seemed eerily similar. So with 1929 as the seed year for the time code calculations, the process quickly revealed the next date when we could expect the conditions of an economic collapse to reappear again. That date was in the late spring of 1979. Well, just as we did in the previous examples, 1979 then became the new seed date for the next round of calculations and those that followed, yielding the second opportunity for economic chaos to repeat, 1999. A summary of the time code calculations and the actual events that happened for each of the dates predicted follows. The first date that the time code calculator produced, 1979, showed that in reality, a surge in oil prices did, in fact, lead to an economic contraction in 1979. The second date, predicted by the calculator, was 1999, and it was then that another surge in oil prices led to a 6% drop in the New York Stock Exchange in October of that year. The third date, predicted by the calculator, was 2007. And it was in 2007 that a combination of unsustainable debt, profit ratios that poised the markets for the 2008 collapse. But because the stock market crash that I was seeing in real time was in 2008, at first that 2007 date made little sense to me. Why didn't the calculator indicate the year of the actual event? Well, looking deeper into what the cycles were actually showing me, Perlstein and Samuelson's article solved the mystery. To quote them, they said, "It is impossible to predict when the magic moment will be reached and everyone finally realizes that the prices being paid for these companies and the debt taken on to support the acquisitions are unsustainable," they said. Leaving little doubt about the consequences of such a realization, the last sentence of the quote in the article said everything. It simply stated that when this happens, the consequences won't be pretty. From the economist's perspective, that magic moment arrived on September 29th, 2008. What's important here is that the experts in the know saw what was happening and recognized the crash of 2008 was inevitable, and they announced what they knew when the conditions were in place in 2007, just as our calculator had predicted. But what about the other two dates? What about 1979 and 1999? There's obviously no financial meltdown anywhere near that of 1929 and 2008 during those years. What was the calculator telling us? Well, as I researched both dates, I realized that we were actually very lucky on both occasions. In the same way that a sharp rise in oil prices had triggered a domino effect that highlighted the weakness of the economy in 2008, something very similar had happened in both 1979 and 1999. During both years, another perfect economic storm was looming when unexpected conditions had converged. And during both years, a global economic crisis had been a very real possibility. Fortunately for us, it was only the conditions that were present. The economic landscape of 1979 offers a perfect example of what I mean here. At the beginning of that year, the indicators used by experts to gauge the health of the economy, things like customer demand and strong sales and lean inventory, they looked promising. There was every reason to believe that 1979 would be a very good year for the nation's economy. But there was one factor that even the experts had not taken into account, and it was the same factor that began the decline in the 2008 economy. It's the price of oil. Through the increases that occurred at the beginning of that year and again at the end of 1979, the price of crude oil rose nearly 100% during that time. And when it did, shockwaves of reduced spending rippled throughout the American economy. Similar conditions in 1999 led to a loss of 630 points on the New York Stock Exchange in October of that year and set into motion the conditions for the economic slowdown that followed in 2000. So while there are probably a number of different reasons for why the economy did not completely collapse in 1979, an analysis by the Research Department of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis may explain one of the most significant. According to the report, the rise in oil prices that year automatically caused the federal budget to tighten in response. And when it did, individual incomes were placed into higher tax brackets, which forced a decrease in people's spending habits. In other words, the higher taxes reduced the amount of money available, and spending was curbed, which ultimately slowed the growth of the economy. Unfortunately, for reasons that are beyond the scope of this audiobook, that system did not operate as it was designed when the oil prices skyrocketed to their highest prices in history during the summer of 2008. The key here is that such market extremes appear to be linked to a cycle. It's a cycle that may be known, maybe more importantly, predicted. The time code calculator indicates that we may be faced with similar economic conditions and the possibility of yet one more financial crisis before the present cycle ends in 2012. Interestingly, the year that it indicates is the same year that the conditions of a number of other seed dates may reappear as well. It's the year 2010. From the cycle of surprise and attack that began in 1941 and reappeared in September of 2001, to the use of atomic weapons that began in 1945 and the crash of the United States economy in 1929, as different and disparate as the seed dates appear from one another, the opportunity for their next appearance occurs within the same year of 2010. While it's probably not insignificant that so many cycles appear to be converging into such a small window of time, it's also important to remember that the end of any cycle also marks the beginning of the next. And as we'll see in Chapter 7, this is the good news that the convergence of so many cycles may be calling to our attention. It's at the end of one cycle and at the beginning of the next that nature offers the greatest opportunity for change. So it's precisely because so many different cycles of such great magnitude, representing so many different kinds of experiences, are all ending within the same period of time, that the 2010 time frame may well represent one of our best opportunities for new choices in our world. As the old cycles end and the new ones begin, we share the rare opportunity to reset the course of our personal and global paths for the future. We may also find that it's the perfect time to do so, well before the 2012 window arrives. As with any window of change, the power of the opportunity begins with the acknowledgement that the choice is possible. The cycles of nature apply to our personal lives as well as to global events. While we probably know this relationship intuitively, it often shows up in our lives in ways and at times that are least opportune or that we least expect. For example, we've all heard of people who leave their relationships, they leave their jobs and their friends, and they move to a new city for a fresh start. Well, you can probably guess what often happens to those of us that do that. While a change of scenery can sometimes be just what the doctor ordered, it's not uncommon to find that while the people, the weather, and the skylines change, the circumstances that we thought we were leaving behind us may not. Why would they? The cycles of our world and our lives are made of time and space, the stuff of the universe that cannot be bound by a city or a building. So when we think about our lives from this perspective, it should come as no surprise that the cycles that play such a powerful role in the world play an equally powerful role in our personal lives. Once again, the key to recognizing such patterns is to recognize where they begin. The seed that was created in my family's house One Sunday morning is a perfect example of just how such a cycle works. The house felt different that morning. Cautiously, I tiptoed from my bedroom down the hallway and peeked into Mom and Dad's bedroom. My father was there with a small suitcase open on the bed, packing his dark suits and crisp corporate shirts. "Good morning, son," he said, as he caught me from the corner of his eye. "Come in here for a minute. I'd like to talk to you." Things had been tense in our house for quite a while. I knew that my parents were having a tough time, and my first thought that I was going to get an explanation at last. I was right, that it wasn't the explanation that I'd expected. "I'm going away for a while," my father said, "and I'm not sure when I'm coming back." Well, that was it. I watched as my father closed his suitcase, followed him as he walked down the hallway and passed my mom in the kitchen. Her eyes were still red from crying after the conversation they'd had the night before, and together we watched my dad as he left our house that day. I didn't know it at the time, but I just witnessed my parents ending their marriage. I was 11 at the time. Well, it wasn't until years later that I began to understand just how much that moment really affected me. As I came to terms with what that day had meant to me, I realized that not only had I lost my father, but I'd lost my family, at least the way I'd known my family for the first 11 years of my life. Well, the reason I'm sharing this story here is because it illustrates how an experience carrying a strong emotional imprint at one time in life can become the primer for the conditions of that experience to repeat throughout other times in life. Just as the seed event that established the pattern for surprise and attack on American soil was set in 1941, the meaning that we give to a traumatic experience can set into motion a cyclic pattern that can follow us throughout our entire lives. If the experience is a positive one of love and life-affirming emotions, then it's probably not a problem. There's certainly no need to recognize it and heal anything. My sense is, however, that we seldom complain of finding ourselves stuck in a mysterious pattern of joy and healing and peace in our lives. When we do, it's probably not something we'd want to change. Well, it's the negative patterns that will undoubtedly arise from the situations of everyday life. Moments of loss, hurt, and betrayal, for example, that can become the unconscious seeds for a pattern that shows up again and again throughout the rest of our lives. Fortunately, just as repeating cycles are also opportunities to change the patterns for war and aggression on a world scale, if we know our individual cycles and how they work, they can become powerful allies in healing some of the greatest hurts of our personal lives. The time code calculator can help us find such cycles in our lives. To the calculator, a cycle is a cycle, whether it's personal or global. The key is to recognize that life follows nature's rhythms and our emotional patterns are part of life. Time code 14 reminds us that the time code calculator can pinpoint personal cycles of love and hurt as well as global cycles of war and peace. So using mode number 3 of the time code calculator to find the time we can expect the conditions of a personal experience from the past to happen again, we can calculate the times in our lives for the repeating conditions of any emotional experience that's left its imprint in our heart. From our greatest loves to our deepest hurts, it's amazing to see how deeply the experiences from one time in life can impact other relationships after that seed is planted. If we can identify one of two keys, then we can also identify those patterns and we can be aware of when they may repeat in our business, casual, and intimate relationships. So let's begin with the example that we started this section with, my feeling of loss and betrayal with my family. We can use my experience of loss and betrayal as the seed pattern to illustrate this point. Because the calculations are so brief, I'll describe them right here in the text. All we need to begin is our age when an obvious momentous event, that seed event, occurred. And the rest is easy. So let's go through the process step by step in words using my parents' divorce as an example. To begin the time code calculations, I'll simply identify my age at the time of the seed event. That's easy because I was 11 years old. This is step number 1. For step number 2, calculate the phi ratio interval of my age during the seed event. Step number three, add the phi ratio interval back to my age during the seed event to determine when the conditions will repeat again. So in the case of losing my family, these calculations would look like the following. Step number one, my age at the time of the seed event was 11. Step number two, the phi ratio of 11 years of age is created by multiplying 0.618 times my age to produce 6.798 years. Adding this phi point of 6.798 years to my original age of 11 results in the age of 17.798 years, almost 18 years old. So from this simple calculation, it's evident that at almost 18 years old is when the conditions of betrayal and loss that I experienced at the age of 11 could next be expected to repeat in my life. As the examples of global war and peace illustrate, although the conditions may lead to a repeat of the seed experience, the mere presence of the conditions is not a promise that it will. However, in my case, it did. In fact, it was precisely during this time that I lost two key relationships in my life, both for the very same reason. One was a friendship, one was a romance, and both involved what I perceived as betrayal of trust, confidences, and promises. If I'd known then what I now understand about cycles, I might have saved myself years of asking why. When we use these calculations in our lives, there's seldom absolutes and rarely exact repeats of earlier situations, but we're looking for general patterns that can give us a heads up in business or romance. The following is a partial list of how the same cycles of betrayal and loss continued in my life for a number of years in both personal and professional relationships, that is, until I recognize them and replace them with a new pattern of clear communication and discernment. As we found in the previous calculation, the first time that the cycle of betrayal and loss repeated in my life was at the age of 17.8 years of age, almost 18 years old. The actual events of my life that played out during that time were in fact highlighted by personal betrayal and loss of significant relationships. The second time that the cycle repeated was at the age of 24.6 years of age. Once again, the actual events of that year included betrayal, this time academic betrayal in my college years, and a loss of a significant personal relationship. The third repetition that the time code calculator predicts was a cycle that actually occurred at the age of 38.2 years of age for me, when business and financial betrayal, as well as the loss of a significant long-time friendship, highlighted that year. Well, the fourth and final iteration of this cycle in my life occurred at the age of 44.99, almost 45 years old. And it was during that time that there was yet another experience of betrayal and business loss. What made this experience so different, however, is that the loss was followed by the healing of the friendship that had been damaged. And it was in that healing that a new seed was planted for the cycle that had followed my life from the time that I was 11 years old and lost my family, lost my father, and felt the sense of betrayal in my life. That seed pattern replaced the old pattern of loss and betrayal, and they've never repeated in my life in the same way since that time. Well, the cycles identified by the time code calculator work for positive experiences of success and accomplishment, as well as for the lessons of hurt and loss. Just as the first experience of emotional trauma creates the pattern of repeating cycles described previously, the gratifying feelings of accomplishment and success are the conditions created as the seed events following their first appearance in life as well. To find patterns related to an experience of success and accomplishment, simply use mode number three of the time code calculator, just as we did in the previous example, beginning with the age when an obvious memory of success and fulfillment occurred in your life. When we look to the cycles of our lives, It's important to remember that there are no absolutes. Because we're dealing with natural processes that follow the rhythms of natural cycles, the choices that we make at any time in our lives can forever change the course of a given cycle. And when they do, we begin new patterns of a new cycle. The key in exploring personal cycles is to recognize first that it's happening and second, the frequency with which it repeats. In doing so, we can prepare for the conditions the cycle offers while making the choices that become the new patterns of the future. In this way, we find the value of using the time code calculator for the 2012 end date as well, just as we can explore our personal past to find the seeds of what we can expect in our future. We can use our knowledge of fractal patterns and nature cycles to discover the key dates that tell us where to look in the past for the conditions that we can expect for 2012 and even beyond. Chapter 6, The End of Time Revisited. What can we expect? The headlines have become all too common. 7.8 earthquake rocks China. Baton Rouge takes brunt of Hurricane Gustav. Southern California declared a disaster area. What were once rare captions that commanded our attention have become all too frequent. While we're still in awe at the power of Mother Nature to destroy centuries of history and lifetimes of human effort in a single day, we're probably less surprised because we've seen it so many times. In the first years of the 21st century, tornadoes, hurricanes, severe thunderstorms, massive flooding, earthquakes, and droughts have taken an unprecedented toll upon human life, property, and a major portion of the world's infrastructure. One earthquake alone in China's Sichuan province, for example, killed more than 69,000 people and caused an estimated $20 billion in damages. In the United States, Hurricane Katrina devastated the city of New Orleans, leaving over 4,000 people dead and more than $81 billion in damage. There can be little doubt in the minds of anyone in the world today that life on planet Earth simply is not business as usual. It's clear that something's happening, and it's big, but just what? And how big is it? Maybe Peggy Noonan, a journalist for the New York Times, best summarizes the uniqueness of our time in history. We are living days of lore, she says, days of big history. Clarifying what she means by big history, she continues, we're living through an epic that scholars 50 years hence will ask about and study. They will see us, you and me, as grizzled veterans of something big. Well, from the 8,000-year-old Hindu Vedas and the ancient Mayan calendar, to the indigenous prophecies of Asia and the Americas, the timekeepers of the world seem to agree with Noonan. As frightening as some of their stories and prophecies are, however, it's important to note that there is nothing in any of the prophecies that tell us unconditionally that the world itself ends or any doubt that we will survive whatever it is that lies before us. What they do say is that the cycle that has spawned the world as we know it completes, and the next one begins, and it happens in our lifetime. So, what is it that we can realistically expect to see in our world as we approach this time that's been calculated, predicted, feared, and welcomed for over 5,000 years? Until now, the answer has been as varied as those who were asked. Because we've had few facts to base our ideas of 2012 upon, much of the popular opinion has been precisely that. Opinion and theory, with little concrete information to rest upon. Well, now, all of that's changed. With our understanding of nature's cycles, fractal time, and the time code calculator, now we can look to the past to see what the future may bring. Specifically, we can look at the years for cycles that have already happened to see what conditions they will carry when they return in our lifetime. Once again, the key here is that if we know where to look in the past, then we know what to expect in the future. Following the success of the time code calculator and correlating the dates leading to September 11, 2001, I began to apply the same principles to explore historic events of the past. While I was not surprised at the accuracy of the calculator, I was in awe of the patterns, the undeniable relationship between cycles of time and the events of our past clearly deserves more study. From the results revealed so far, however, three principles have become apparent. First, the conditions of nature, including human events, do repeat themselves in cycles. Secondly, the conditions of one cycle often repeat with a greater magnitude of expression in a later cycle. And third, it's the return of the conditions rather than the events themselves that can be predicted by the calculator. So from the experiences of marriage, divorce, success, and loss, to the cycles of war and peace, it's clear beyond any reasonable doubt that the same pattern can show up in life time and time again. And when it does, it's not uncommon for the repeating pattern to make itself known as an even stronger pattern than before, and often one that really catches our attention. The facts of the September 11th attacks illustrate this point with the manner and the location of the way they were carried out. Time code 15 summarizes this key, stating simply that patterns identified for an earlier time in history tend to repeat themselves with greater intensity at later times. So to know what conditions the 2012 calendar end date may hold in store, it's important to bear in mind that 2012 marks the completion of not only one, but two nested cycles of time. The 5,125-year-long Great Cycle, or World Age, that ends at that time is part of a larger 26,000-year precessional cycle that also completes at the same time. So if we know how to read the key patterns for both cycles, each one will tell us something a little different about our respective time in history. The Great Cycle of 5,125 years, for example, covers about the same period of time as most of what is regarded as recorded history. So we can look to this cycle to see how civilization has been influenced by the changes of the past. This includes things like patterns of war and peace and the rise and the collapse of nations and superpowers. But since the 2012 end date is marked by an alignment of planets and stars that happened before recorded human history, we must go back, way back, to the last time such a pattern occurred to get the big picture. And that is a time long before the current world age. It's during this time of an even older cycle that the larger patterns we're living today become clear. These patterns are seen in things like changes in global temperature, the melting of the polar ice caps, changes in the solar cycles of the sun, and shifts in the magnetic fields of the Earth. So, to answer our question of what 2012 means for us, we must take both of these nested cycles into account. Only then can we give ourselves a realistic picture of the ancient seeds for what we can truly expect in our lives today. As we saw in previous chapters, the time code calculator points us to precise dates in history. But without a way to explore what they mean, those dates are just insignificant numbers. To give meaning to the dates of the past, we need a way to look at different points in time through the same kind of window. Based upon conversations I've had with people throughout the world since our seminars began in 1986, and the questions that have followed, I've chosen three categories that will help us to do just that. The window that will help us to make sense of the past is a template made of human events, earth events, and celestial events. If we can look into the past using these categories as a cookie cutter of sorts, then we can compare apples and apples in our investigation of what to expect for the 2012 window. Time code 16 summarizes this point, reminding us that by using a template of human, earth, and celestial events, we create a consistent way to view the past as a realistic window to the future. Once we do so, the patterns for what we can expect for 2012 will become clear. So let's begin with a brief explanation of each category, describing what it is and why it's important. The first category is human events. Human events are those things that happen with regard to civilization and the way we respond to the challenges that we face as a collective population. These include the rise and fall of superpowers, cycles of war and peace, and the expansion and collapse of entire civilizations. This is an important category for us today because historic records suggest a strong link between the physical changes of our planet and the cycles of war and peace, failing economies, and collapse of civilizations. Second category is Earth events. Category of Earth events includes nature and the natural systems that tend to be most affected by world age transitions. History has shown that these are the conditions that drive big and rapid change in populations and entire civilizations. They also tend to be the events that force us to choose between competition and cooperation, war and peace, as we respond to the changes. One of the most significant of Earth events is the strength of Earth's magnetic fields. Because the fields are a key factor for changes in global temperature, how much energy we receive from the sun, the melting of polar ice, and even the rise and fall of sea levels, let's briefly explore just how the magnetic fields of the Earth work and how we're affected by them. The relationship between the strength of Earth's magnetic field and the degree of climate change that seems to happen when that field weakens is a controversial area of ongoing study. While scientists have yet to arrive at a consensus, at least one that's published in the peer-reviewed journals, the documented effects between magnetism and the major climate indicators is clear. Recently, two teams of scientists completed a monumental task that gives us an unprecedented snapshot of this relationship for a period of time greater than anything we've ever had in the past. In June of 1999, a press release announced the successful completion of a drilling project deeper into the ice of Antarctica than anyone had ever drilled before. For hundreds of thousands of years, a natural process has created and preserved a record of the Earth's climate as a layer of air bubbles captured in the Antarctic ice. Each year, the topmost layer freezes over. The airborne elements, things like oxygen, carbon dioxide, and so on, including rain, snow, microscopic life, and microscopic dust present in the moment of that time, is frozen into a permanent record of that year that adds to the thickness of the ice. As long as the ice remains, we have a virtual library of our planet's history captured in the thousands of layers that have accumulated over thousands of years. This history includes indicators of global temperatures, available sunlight, sea levels, and thickness of the ice caps. A new method of using these elements to tell us how strong the magnetic fields were in the past now makes the continuous ice cores even more valuable. The 1999 completion of the cores drilled to the bottom of the Antarctic ice sheet now gives us a continuous record of Earth's climate for the last 420,000 years, the longest continuous period of time that scientists have ever been able to evaluate. The data revealed from these cores now gives us a powerful key to understanding the many roles that our planet's fields of magnetism play in our climate as well as in our lives. In general, it appears that the relationship is as follows. When the magnetic field lessens, even a little, the weaker shield allows more of the sun's energy to reach the Earth's surface. It's this increased solar energy that begins a period of global warming. As the land, oceans, and atmosphere heat up, their warming sets into motion the events that lead to the climate change seen in the geologic record. We don't have to be climate experts to understand what happens next. The warmer temperatures begin to melt the polar ice, where huge amounts of water have been stored for thousands of years. This melting, in turn, releases the water into the oceans and the changes in the delicate balance that drives our weather patterns. As the melted water mingles with the ocean currents, it changes the salinity, it changes the temperature, two powerful factors that have a direct effect upon weather patterns across the planet. This cycle helps to give perspective to what scientists are calling the so-called abrupt climate change of today. While the periods of warming are certainly associated with greater levels of greenhouse gases, such as carbon dioxide, These processes can clearly be seen on a cyclic basis during times when there was no human industry. In other words, while civilization has certainly contributed to the levels of carbon dioxide that normally exist in the atmosphere, and we definitely need to find sustainable new ways to power our civilization, the amount of that contribution appears to have accelerated the effects of a natural cycle that was already underway. When we think of things that are certain in life, we tend to count the magnetic fields of our planet among those certainties. For as long as anyone living today can remember, every time we've looked at the needle of a compass, the northern tip of the needle is pointed in the same direction, up there toward the north magnetic pole of the Earth. While we tend to think of Earth's north and south poles as a sure thing, the reality is that our planet's magnetism is anything but certain. In fact, it's a moving mystery. We know, for example, that every once in a while, something almost unthinkable and truly mind-boggling happens. For reasons that are still not fully understood, and at times that appear to be unpredictable, our familiar north and south poles trade places. The magnetic field of the Earth does a complete flip-flop, and north becomes south while south becomes north. Although polar reversals have not happened during the 5,000-year history of civilizations, the evidence shows that they have happened many times in the past. The geologic record, for example, shows that such magnetic reversals have already happened 171 times in the last 76 million years. And although the record also shows that we have come close to a reversal a number of times, scientists believe that the last complete one happened 780,000 years ago, suggesting to some people that we may be overdue for the next one. As we'll see from the following data, however, don't look for a magnetic flip-flop to happen immediately. The reason is because the conditions that trigger such an event appear to be linked to things that happen beyond the Earth, celestial events, throughout the solar system, and possibly even the galaxy.